Hey, it's Jacob Goldstein from Business History. In our new series, American Genius, we tell the stories of three great writers who changed the way business works in America. Our first episode is about Benjamin Franklin, who, among many other things, was a best-selling business writer. Take a listen.
He's writing this much later in his life, consciously creating this image of himself. And I do want to emphasize how unusual this model is at the time, this self-made man myth, because you don't want to be self-made. It's low class to be self-made. You know, this idea that we have today is the opposite, right? And it comes from Franklin. Today, there is the derisive term nepo baby.
Well, exactly right. And these days, if you are a billionaire, you had better have a Benjamin Franklin story about starting in a garage, coming up with the idea from nothing.
And here is Benjamin Franklin inventing it right before our eyes.
This has been brought to you by Odoo. To listen to more of our American Genius series, listen to Business History. New episodes release every Wednesday on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at chumbacasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T&Cs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Midnight has passed, and in the stillness of these hours, the hauntings are never silent. This is Real Ghost Stories Online. After midnight.
The table wasn't the reason Karen and her husband stopped at the antique store that afternoon. They had spent the day driving through the countryside, stopping occasionally at small shops and roadside businesses before heading home. The antique store happened to be one of those places. A faded sign sat near the road, and several pieces of furniture were displayed outside an aging barn. It looked like the kind of place people wandered through for a few minutes before moving on. Karen never intended to buy anything. In fact, she remembered wanting to leave almost immediately after they stepped inside. There was nothing obviously wrong with the place. It smelled like old wood and dust, much like every antique store she'd ever visited, yet something about it made her uncomfortable. Her husband, on the other hand, seemed perfectly at ease. Before long, he found himself admiring a narrow oak table tucked against one wall of the barn. It was a beautiful piece of furniture. The dark wood showed signs of age, but the craftsmanship was exceptional. Intricate carvings ran along the edges, and despite a few scratches and worn spots, the table had clearly been well cared for at some point in its life. The owner claimed it had come from an estate several counties away, though he offered few details beyond that. Karen wasn't nearly as enthusiastic as her husband, but she couldn't deny it was a nice piece. Eventually, they bought it, loaded it into the truck, and drove home without giving the decision another thought. The table found a home in their foyer near the front staircase. It fit the space perfectly. Friends complimented it when they visited, and over the next several weeks, it simply became another piece of furniture in the house. If anyone had asked Karen about it a month later, she probably would have described it as one of the better purchases they had made. The first strange incident happened on an otherwise ordinary evening. Karen and her husband were sitting in the living room watching television. Through the opening behind them, they could see part of the kitchen, including the back door. Stuck to the window of that door was a rubber ball covered in suction cups. One of their children had won it years earlier, and at some point someone had tossed it against the glass, where it remained. Partway through the movie, they heard a thud from the kitchen. Both of them turned and saw the ball lying on the floor. Neither gave it much thought. The suction cups probably lost their grip. Karen picked it up, set it on the counter, and returned to the living room. The incident was forgotten almost immediately. Later that evening, however, she went upstairs to switch over a load of laundry. When she came back down and walked through the kitchen, she stopped. The ball was attached to the window again. Her first assumption was that her husband had stuck it back on the glass while she was upstairs. When she asked him about it, he looked genuinely confused. He hadn't moved from his recliner all evening. Karen was equally certain she hadn't put it there. The conversation lasted only a minute before they both shrugged it off, but the incident lingered in her thoughts long after they went to bed. Not because it was frightening, because it made no sense. The second incident was harder to dismiss. A few weeks later, Karen was home alone. She had spent most of the afternoon cleaning and was carrying a basket of laundry downstairs when she noticed something immediately felt wrong. At first, she couldn't identify what it was. Then she looked toward the foyer and froze. The table had moved. When she left the room earlier that day, it had been sitting flush against the wall. Now it stood several feet away across the foyer, positioned perfectly straight as though someone had deliberately picked it up and relocated it. Karen set down the laundry basket and checked the house from top to bottom. Nobody was there. By the time her husband came home, she had already spent hours trying to come up with a reasonable explanation. Maybe one of the kids had moved it before leaving. Maybe she had somehow remembered its location incorrectly. Yet the more she thought about it, the less convincing those explanations became. The table wasn't especially heavy, but it wasn't light either. Moving it required effort, and neither of them could think of a reason why anyone would have done it. For the first time, Karen began wondering whether the strange events might somehow be connected. A few days later, she walked into the foyer and found something even stranger. The large area rug covering most of the floor had been folded over on itself, not wrinkled, not pushed out of place, folded. The edges lined up neatly, as though someone had intentionally folded it toward the antique table before stopping halfway through the task. Karen stood there staring at it for several moments. She lived alone with her thoughts long enough to know the difference between something accidentally disturbed and something intentionally moved. The rug looked intentional. That was enough for her. She grabbed her purse, left the house, and spent the rest of the afternoon waiting for her husband to get home. When he finally arrived, he found her sitting in the parking lot of a nearby grocery store. It was the first time since buying the table that neither of them laughed off what was happening. They still weren't ready to call it paranormal, but they were beginning to run out of explanations. The strange incidents continued over the following weeks. Nothing dramatic, nothing that would convince a skeptic. It was always small things. Objects appearing where neither of them remembered leaving them. Doors found open when they were certain they had been closed. The feeling that someone had been in a room moments earlier. Each incident by itself seemed harmless. Together, however, they created an atmosphere neither of them could ignore. The final push came from their youngest son. One evening, he came downstairs looking unusually upset. At first, Karen assumed he had simply experienced a bad dream. Instead, he told her he had seen someone in the house. Not a burglar, not a stranger, a girl. He described seeing a girl standing near the foyer before she disappeared. Karen tried to reassure him, but the story unsettled her. More than she wanted to admit. A few days later, he reported seeing someone else. This time, it was only a quick glimpse, but he insisted he wasn't imagining it. By then, even her husband was beginning to wonder whether something was wrong. The subject came up during a family gathering a few weeks later. Most people laughed. One person didn't. Karen's younger brother listened to the entire story while standing in the foyer, staring at the table. Unlike everyone else, he wasn't interested in the paranormal side of the conversation. He was interested in the furniture. He loved antiques. The more he examined the table, the more impressed he became with the craftsmanship. By the end of the evening, he was already asking questions about where they had found it and whether they planned to keep it. When Karen admitted they had discussed getting rid of it, in his mind, they were about to throw away a beautiful antique because of a handful of coincidences. And before the night was over, he offered to take it himself. Karen's brother Mike thought the entire thing was ridiculous, not the stories themselves. He believed Karen and her husband were telling the truth about what they had experienced. What he didn't believe was their conclusion that the antique table had anything to do with it. From his perspective, a few strange incidents had slowly grown into a family legend. Every unexplained event was now being connected to a piece of furniture that had done nothing more than sit quietly in the foyer. More importantly, Mike genuinely loved the table. He had spent years restoring old furniture as a hobby and immediately recognized the quality of the craftsmanship. Pieces like that weren't easy to find anymore, especially at a price ordinary people could afford. When Karen admitted they had discussed getting rid of it, Mike couldn't understand why. By the end of the evening, he had convinced them to let him take it home. Karen felt surprisingly relieved watching the table leave the house. She wouldn't have admitted it aloud, but a part of her had started blaming it for everything strange that happened. Rationally, she knew how absurd that sounded. Emotionally, however, she couldn't shake the feeling that the activity and the table had arrived together. Whether that meant anything was another question entirely. The following weeks were quiet. For the first time in months, the house felt normal again. No strange discoveries waited for Karen when she came downstairs in the morning. No objects appeared where they shouldn't have been. The uneasy feeling that someone had just left a room moments before seemed to vanish. Even her husband admitted the house felt different, though neither of them seemed eager to discuss why. Meanwhile, Mike was thoroughly enjoying his new acquisition. The table looked even better in his house than it had in Karen's. He spent an entire weekend cleaning the wood, touching up a few scratches, and applying fresh wax to the finish. Every time he looked at it, he became more convinced that his sister had nearly thrown away a beautiful piece of furniture over a series of coincidences. For nearly a month, that appeared to be exactly what had happened. Then his wife started mentioning little things. At first, it was nothing worth paying attention to. One morning, she found a dining room chair pulled several feet away from the table. Mike blamed their teenage son. His son denied moving it. A few days later, she mentioned hearing footsteps downstairs after everyone had gone to bed. Mike checked the house and found nothing. The following week, she thought she heard a door close while she was home alone. Once again, there was nothing to investigate by the time Mike got home. Individually, none of those incidents meant much. Houses made noises. People forgot where they left things. Memory wasn't perfect. Mike had explanations for all of it, and for a while, those explanations were good enough. Then his daughter started talking about someone standing in the hallway. The first time she mentioned it, Mike assumed she was joking. The second time, he realized she wasn't. According to her, she occasionally caught glimpses of an older man standing near the staircase. The sightings never lasted more than a second or two. By the time she looked directly at him, he was gone. She never seemed frightened while describing it, which somehow made the stories more unsettling. Mike didn't tell Karen, and he didn't tell anyone. The last thing he wanted was to contribute another chapter to what he still privately considered an exaggerated ghost story. Instead, he kept looking for explanations. Maybe his daughter was catching shadows out of the corner of her eye. Maybe she was half asleep. Maybe once the idea entered her mind, she started noticing things that weren't really there. The problem was that the incidents kept accumulating. One morning, Mike stepped outside to grab the newspaper before leaving for work. It took less than a minute. He walked down the driveway, picked up the paper, and returned to the front porch. When he reached for the doorknob, however, the door wouldn't open. At first, he assumed the lock had jammed, but then he realized the deadbolt was engaged. From the inside, Mike stood there staring at the door, trying to understand what he was looking at. His wife was still asleep. His son was still asleep. His daughter was upstairs getting ready for school. Nobody should have been near the front door. He knocked several times before his daughter finally came downstairs and unlocked it. The incident bothered him far more than he wanted to admit. Not because it was impossible. There were reasonable explanations. Someone could have locked it without realizing it. Maybe he had somehow engaged the deadbolt himself before stepping outside. Yet the more he thought about it, the less convincing those explanations felt. For the first time since bringing the table home, he found himself thinking about Karen's stories. Not believing them, just remembering them. The moved furniture, the folded rug, the sightings. The growing sense that something wasn't right. Weeks passed before anything else happened, but by then Mike had started paying closer attention. He noticed little things he would have ignored before. A door that seemed to be standing open when he was certain he had closed it. Objects that appeared slightly out of place, the occasional feeling that someone was standing behind him when nobody was there. Then his wife asked him a question that immediately made his stomach sink. Had he been moving the table? According to her, it never seemed to be sitting in quite the same place anymore. Not enough to immediately catch someone's attention. But every few days, she would notice it at a slightly different angle than before. At first, she assumed Mike had been moving it while cleaning. When he denied it, She assumed she was imagining things, and now she wasn't so sure. The conversation unsettled both of them because they knew exactly where it led. For months, Mike had been the one laughing at Karen's concerns. He had been the voice of reason, the skeptic, the person pointing out that old furniture couldn't be haunted. Yet that night, after everyone else had gone to bed, he found himself standing alone in the living room, staring at the table. And for the first time since bringing it home, he wondered whether taking it had been a mistake. For the next several weeks, Mike found himself in an increasingly uncomfortable position. He still didn't believe the table was haunted, at least not in the way Karen seemed to. The problem was that he had slowly run out of explanations. The incidents weren't dramatic enough to prove anything. There were no shadow figures standing at the foot of the bed and no objects flying across rooms. Instead, it was a constant stream of small events that were easy to dismiss individually but much harder to ignore when viewed together. His wife continued noticing the table sitting at slightly different angles than she remembered. Their daughter occasionally mentioned seeing an older man near the staircase. Once, Mike came home from work and found a framed photograph sitting on the table, even though he was certain it had been displayed elsewhere in the house. Every incident had a possible explanation. The problem was that the explanations kept becoming less convincing. The situation finally came to a head on a quiet Saturday afternoon. Mike was replacing a light fixture in the dining room while his wife was out shopping. Their son was spending the day with friends, and their daughter was visiting relatives. For the first time all week, he had the house entirely to himself. The job should have taken no more than 15 minutes. He positioned a step ladder beneath the fixture, climbed up with a screwdriver and a box of bulbs, and got to work. What happened next stayed with him for years. He had just removed the old fixture cover when he felt something strike the middle of his back, not hard enough to injure him, but firm enough to throw him off balance. The sensation was so unexpected that his first instinct was to grab the ladder. By the time he reached for it, however, it was too late. The ladder shifted beneath him and he crashed to the floor. The fall left him sore but otherwise unharmed. What bothered him wasn't the injury. It was the certainty that someone had touched him. As he sat on the floor, catching his breath, he replayed the moment again and again. The feeling had been distinct. It hadn't felt like losing his balance. It hadn't felt like the ladder shifting beneath him. It felt exactly like two hands pushing against his back. The problem, of course, was that nobody else had been there. For the first time since taking the table home, Mike called Karen and told her everything. He tried to downplay the story while he was telling it, but even he could hear the uncertainty in his own voice. By the time he finished, neither of them had much left to say. Karen finally asked whether he was ready to get rid of the table. The question should have been easy to answer. It wasn't. What surprised Mike most was how reluctant he felt. Despite everything that had happened, he still liked the table. It was beautifully made. It fit the room perfectly. Every time he thought about loading it into the truck, he found a reason to wait another week. His wife admitted she felt the same way. Neither of them wanted the thing in their house anymore, yet neither seemed eager to move it. That realization bothered Mike almost as much as the activity itself. Eventually, he came up with what seemed like a reasonable solution. A friend from work collected antiques and had admired the table several times while visiting. Mike offered it to him, and the friend immediately accepted. The arrangement seemed perfect. The table would go to someone who appreciated old furniture, and Mike could stop worrying about whether every strange event in the house was somehow connected to it. Then the plan began falling apart in ways nobody could explain. The first time the friend was supposed to pick it up, a family emergency came up. The second time, his truck broke down. The third time, he simply forgot. Weeks passed. Every attempt to move the table seemed to run into some new problem. Eventually, the friend called and apologized, saying he had changed his mind and no longer wanted it. Mike never told him about the strange activity, that the friend had no reason to back out, yet somehow he had. That was the moment Mike finally made a decision. A few days later, he loaded the table into the back of his truck and drove it to Karen's house. Together, they stood in the driveway discussing what to do next. Selling it felt wrong. Donating it felt worse. If they genuinely believed the table might be connected to the activity, passing it along to someone else didn't seem responsible. The conversation eventually reached the conclusion they had both been avoiding. The table had to be destroyed. Even then, nobody was excited about the idea. It wasn't some ugly piece of junk they were throwing away. It was a beautiful antique. Mike ran his hand across the carved wood several times while they prepared a burn pile on family property. Standing there in broad daylight, the entire situation felt ridiculous. Part of him still couldn't believe he was seriously considering burning a valuable piece of furniture because of a collection of strange experiences. Then he remembered the locked door, the sightings, the moved furniture, the feeling of being pushed from the ladder, and for the first time, destroying the table seemed like the most reasonable option available. The fire burned for most of the afternoon. By the time it was finished, almost nothing remained except ash and a few blackened fragments of wood. The family stood around talking quietly while the last embers faded. Nobody celebrated. Nobody declared victory. Mostly, they just felt relieved that the decision had finally been made. Days passed, then weeks, then months. The sightings stopped. Objects remained where they were left. Nobody heard unexplained footsteps. Nobody found furniture moved from one room to another. The uneasy feeling that something else occupied the house disappeared completely. Life simply returned to normal. Years later, Mike still doesn't know what happened. He remains uncomfortable calling the table haunted because he has no way to prove it. He prefers explanations that can be tested and verified, and even now he occasionally finds himself searching for one that fits. What he can't explain is why two different households experienced nearly identical activity while the table was present, only for that activity to stop completely once the table was destroyed. Maybe there is a rational explanation. What he does know is that if someone offered him that same table today, beautifully restored and completely free of charge, he wouldn't bring it into his house, and not because he's afraid of antiques, because some lessons only need to be learned once.
Want more real ghost stories? Then press subscribe now so you don't miss any of the multiple new ghost stories we drop for you every day. Only here at Real Ghost Stories Online.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boost and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T&Cs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever?
Cabin crew.
Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boost and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and if you're looking for some serious fun, head over to ChumbaCasino.com. At ChumbaCasino, you can play all your favorite social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. It's the most fun you can have on your phone or computer.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey guys, it's Ryan. I want to tell you about my new pastime, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has been around for over a decade, delivering the most fun you can have online. Play social casino-style games for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Drew McIntyre here from WWE. Wielding the claymore can be a life of chaos. When I'm not dominating in the ring, Chumba Casino is how this warrior takes a wee break. With hundreds of online social games and new weekly releases, there's always something fresh to try. And those daily boosts, next level. Even my free time feels like Valhalla. So when life feels like a battle, kick up your feet, have some fun, and let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.